Greetings once again, America. My name is Doug McBurney, and you may have heard the news. But stand by now for the Worldview. That's right, it's the Weekly Worldview. The pulse, the heartbeat, if you will, of conservative talk on the internet. So good to have you back. Welcome back to the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. And I just want to start off by letting everyone know that this past week I made it all the way from Denver to Houston and back with a stop in Dallas without a speeding ticket. Not a single speeding ticket the whole way. Really, though, it was thanks to the radar detector. I know, I talked to a friend of mine, a couple of friends from church who went on a cross-country gallivant through Michigan, across the Northern Tier, down to South Carolina, over to Nashville, Tulsa, back to Denver, 4,000-some-odd miles, no radar detector. The guy tells me he averages 90 miles an hour when he's on the freeway. And I said, well, you must be blessed. God must be looking out for you because I can barely leave my house anymore. By the way, I do need to pay that speeding ticket.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to have to let us make a mental note, even more of a mental note. I'm going to write the note down on paper.
So God hates you.
God hates me. That's right. He's abandoned me. Okay, pay speeding ticket to criminals in Jefferson County. I think the time has come where I have to do that. So we're celebrating just the lack of my normal weekly fine here at the McBurney compound. And I like that. But I think we want to start with some celebrity news. And I hate to do this to you right off the bat, but talking to my extremely attractive audio engineer, who you all know has expressed her reservations about my obsession with the homosexuals and their agenda. Well, let's start with a story about Chaz Bono. Well, Chaz Bono, this according to the Daily Mail out of the UK. Chaz Bono braved controversy to be the first transgender contestant on Dancing with the Stars, but he revealed in an interview that jibes over his weight had troubled him. So I see three things already wrong with this story. The fact that they used the masculine pronoun he three times. That's just sad. When the people right there, the people who are writing about you are actually allowing you to continue in the fantasy that you've actually changed genders, Chaz. It's really sad. You know, they say don't read your own press, and for Chaz, that's especially true. Well, apparently, one of the judges on Dancing with the Stars, have we ever watched that show? I haven't watched that one. Apparently, one of the judges on Dancing with the Stars called her a basketball, called her an Ewok.
What's an Ewok mean?
What's an Ewok? See, now I can tell you're from a foreign country.
What's an Ewok?
It's the Star Wars. They were little, fat, chubby, round, furry things.
Okay.
You foreigners wouldn't understand.
No, Star Wars is big in Japan.
Well, that's true. You should know. Anyway, the judge compared Chaz to a basketball, an Ewok, and compared her to a flightless bird, possibly a penguin.
Oh.
That's...
So they're insulting all those creatures?
Well, now that's... That's pretty accurate. They're insulting all, and a basketball, an inanimate object gets an insult, too. Not Bono. That's a completely different, right? I'm sorry. As far as we know, Bono has not undergone any surgery to mutilate his body.
He's all for, I'm sure.
But yeah, I'm sure he's a supporter, and I'm sure he would use the masculine pronoun in addressing Chaz. But Chaz Bono, who earned a score of 19 out of a possible 30 last Monday night on the television program, also said she feels that there's a gender divide between how overweight men and overweight women are treated on the show. Mm. A gender divide. interesting for Chaz to point up a gender divide. It's hard to say how exactly Chaz has been insulted when it's hard to say what exactly it is. And if there is a gender divide, Chaz, just which side are you on? Chaz mentioned the positive response that judges gave to Kirstie Alley last season. What's that supposed to mean, Chaz? Are you implying that Kirstie Alley might be overweight? Anyway, folks, I think I said it a few months back on the broadcast that Chaz Bono, instead of dealing with the fact that she was an overweight but relatively attractive woman, couldn't deal with the fact that she wasn't a perfect Barbie doll cutout, and instead of just dealing with it like a normal person, has undergone surgery to mutilate her body, and it's really sad. Here on the Weekly Worldview, we will refer to Chaz Bono as a she at all times, for her own good, for crying out loud. Just a sad story. It's sad. But you know, Chaz, nobody can make fun of you for the obvious fact that you're a ridiculous comic book caricature of yourself. And so I guess they fall back on the fat jokes, because everyone's just too confused and doesn't exactly know what they can and cannot say around you without ruining their own careers, and I guess fat jokes are still okay. You know, although we don't support fat jokes. Yeah, I'm not for making fun of Chaz because she's overweight, for crying out loud. A lot of great, wonderful, good people who do a lot of wonderful, good things have a little bit of a weight problem. And who am I to go after them when I've got my own problems? But I have not undergone surgery to mutilate my body, and I'm not living in a delusional state. But Chaz is, and she's being encouraged to do so by just about everyone around her. And it's just sad. Sad to see. But maybe Chaz will come back to us one of these days. She'll switch back from the dark side. All right, let's move on. A shocking story from the Culture File this week. Folks, if you haven't heard this news, you may not be prepared to deal with it, and I hate to break it to you this way. But here it is. This is from, where is this from? The Associated Press reports that coroner Suzanne Greenway gave a verdict of death by misadventure to one Amy Winehouse. Does anybody remember Amy Winehouse? Vaguely? Just go back through your memory banks, ladies and gentlemen. The coroner has said that Amy Winehouse suffered an accidental alcohol poisoning when she resumed drinking after several weeks of abstinence. Shock of all shocks, Amy Winehouse drank herself to death. Hard to believe. Let's see here. The coroner, the pathologist said that the small amount of a drug prescribed to help her cope with symptoms of alcohol withdrawal had nothing to do with her death. Apparently no other drugs in her system. Winehouse joins a long list of celebrities who died after fighting alcohol problems, including jazz great Billie Holiday, AC/DC lead singer Bon Scott, film legend Richard Burton, writers Dylan Thomas and Jack Kerouac, and country music pioneer Hank Williams, all dead at the hands of a bottle, or with a bottle in their hands. Well, the bottle wasn't in their hands when they were found, but now, they left some people off the list. Jim Morrison, although I think technically that was a heart attack, allegedly.
Yeah.
And John Bonham, Led Zeppelin drummer, I believe, found in the backseat of a vehicle, choked on vomit, believed to be his own. And then who was the drummer for The Who? Didn't he die of an alcohol overdose?
The Who? You're asking me?
They're a little before your time.
Wait.
Anyway, there's a whole bunch of them that Amy has added her name to an illustrious list of...
Yeah, so it's nothing new, so move on.
Yeah, oh, just move on. It's nothing new. Nothing to see here, folks. Just move on. Anyway, there was some speculation that perhaps Amy had not died from an alcohol or drug overdose. It was always my sneaking suspicion that she had, and it turns out that indeed that was the case. All right, now, more celebrity news.
Okay, all right.
Okay, I just want to waste the first few moments of the program on celebrities. Okay, this is, let's see, this is from the National Enquirer. which is now, it's a credible news source. I mean, when you put it up next to MSNBC or Fox News, I mean, they're as credible as anyone else. From the National Enquirer, Michelle Obama is furious with Southern cooking celebrity Paula Deen for letting out the secret that the First Lady, who is allegedly a healthy eating advocate who's waging a war against childhood obesity, well, Paula says she pigs out on fattening foods, right? This is an update from a story we did a couple weeks ago. Apparently, this has been festering and bubbling under the surface ever since the story was broadcast to the greater general public right here on the Weekly Worldview. And I just want to apologize to Paula Deen for sparking this war. Although, if I'm not mistaken, Paula Deen is a flaming liberal.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, just an unbelievable flaming liberal. She's got to be...
Jimmy Carter on her show.
No. Yeah. She had Jimmy Carter on her show?
Cooking Southern food together.
Using peanut oil only, yeah. Jimmy Carter. Anyway, Paula says, quote, that Michelle Obama probably ate more than any other guest I've ever had on the show. She kept eating, even during commercials. You know what the Obamas' favorite foods are? Hmm? Hot wings, you know. Those kind of foods that aren't necessarily top-of-the-list healthy foods, that's what they like. Well, a source close to Michelle Obama says, quote, Michelle now deeply regrets ever being on Paula's show. There are a lot of digs she would have been able to brush off, but portraying her as a high-calorie gorger during her crusade for healthy eating, well, that is crossing the line. So that's where you cross the line with the Obama administration. Anyone within the Obama administration, as soon as you bring out the truth about them, well, now this means war. And so Michelle Obama will look forward to the continuing battle between the two leftist women, Michelle Obama and Paula Deen. And Michelle Obama may outweigh Paula Deen, but it's only because she's taller. It's only because she's taller, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah, you know, speaking of an Ewok, Michelle Obama looks like an Ewok. Does that help you relate the look? No, it doesn't help at all.
She looks like Darth Vader.
Darth Vader? All right, let's just stop with the Star Wars references.
I don't know.
She looks like an Ewok, Michelle Obama does. I had never put that together in my head before, but there it is. Pull it up on your computers, ladies and gentlemen. Go to YouTube, pull up an Ewok, and you tell me that Michelle Obama doesn't look like an Ewok, at least from the neck up, okay? All right. Now, so enough. We've dispatched with the non-serious.
I actually enjoy that.
Well, good, good. That was the whole point, was that you would enjoy that. But let's dispatch with the meaningless celebrity. Well, not meaningless, but less important news. Let's move on to something that is important, acutely so. And for that, we go to the Justice File, another story from our good friends at the Associated Press. They're not really our good friends at the Associated Press, but we do appreciate their reportage from time to time, and I'm sure they're very happy to be mentioned here on The Worldview, one of the few shows on the planet that actually matters. Yeah, there's only a couple, and you're listening to one of them, ladies and gentlemen, and we appreciate you being here to listen. Now, this is serious, though. This is from Sioux Falls, South Dakota. A prisoner named Eric Robert, 49-year-old prisoner there in South Dakota, pled guilty in September to killing a guard, Ronald Johnson, back on April 12th, which happened to be the prison guard's birthday. Roberts has waived his right to a jury trial and said he wants to be put to death, but, and whenever but comes up, you can guarantee you there's a lawyer involved in that but. He wants to be put to death, but Second Circuit Judge Bradley Zell said the state still has to prove the death penalty is warranted. Did I mention that Robert pled guilty to murdering a prison guard? Well, that's not enough for Second Circuit Judge Bradley Zell. He says the state still has to prove the death penalty is warranted. Now, Robert had been serving an 80-year sentence on a kidnapping charge. So Robert told the judge during his pre-sentencing hearing that he was so full of anger on April 12th that he would have killed anyone who stood in his way, He said, "Judge, if you stood between me and the door of freedom, I would have killed you." He said that to the judge in court. Well, he asked the judge last Wednesday to sentence him to death, saying his one regret is that he did not kill another officer, and he said, quote, "I will kill again," unquote. But Judge Zell is still unconvinced, being a lawyer and all. Judge Zell told the prisoner, the murderer, the kidnapper, that wanting to die is not reason enough for the death penalty. And I would agree with the judge on that. Just wanting to die is not enough reason for the death penalty. But could we consider the murder and the kidnapping, Judge? Please. Could we just consider those in the deliberations in deciding what to do with Eric Robert, who murdered a prison guard on his birthday and was already serving time for kidnapping? Perhaps the judge, maybe the judge hasn't seen everything in the briefs and is not fully aware. Oh, and what about threatening to kill a judge in court? That's, maybe you'll consider that as well. But being a very lawyerly fellow, I'm sure that Judge Zell will come down on the wrong side of this issue, and he will let Eric Robert live. And there's a good chance that Eric Robert will kill again.
He said
he would. And he did it already. So anyway, Judge Zell, we do appreciate at least the fact that by your actions, we realize that we never want to let any of our kids into law school. I am Doug McBurney, and this is the Weekly Worldview, the place to be if you're interested in genuine conservative talk. And it's interesting that I just mentioned the fact that we must never allow our children to go to law school. And there are an awful lot of people out there, ladies and gentlemen, who are trying to figure out what's going on with the kids these days. What's the problem with the kids? And if that's your situation, if you've got problems, or if you're just wondering what the heck is going on these days with the youngsters, I highly recommend that you either come down to Denver Bible Church or at least pick up the last three or four sermons from Denver Bible Church, because our pastor's been talking about child rearing. And today, it was phenomenal. I'll tell you what, we missed church last week, and going to have to pick up those CDs because it was all very, very helpful. Good, solid, biblical. Well, let's just get to it. I got a story from Breitbart. There's a new study. Let's see here. Researchers say that they have found that high school students who consumed more than 5 cans of non-diet soft drinks every week were between 9 and 15% likelier to engage in an aggressive act compared with counterparts who drank less soda pop. So here we have it, ladies and gentlemen. Again, the struggling, trying to figure out why is it that the youngsters these days are undisciplined, violent, disrespectful, and whatever other adjectives you can associate to the youngsters these days. There's a professor at the Harvard School of Public Health. His name is David Hemingway. Professor at Harvard, studying why it is that youngsters seem to be more violent these days. Says David Hemingway, professor at the Harvard Law School of Public Health, he stressed that only further work would confirm or disprove the key question whether higher consumption of sweet soda pop caused violent behavior in teenagers and young people. So he need further work. Obviously, he's already lobbying for the next grant so that he can go and study Mike and Ike, you know, or lollipops. Sweet tarts, perhaps, will be the next multi-million-dollar study undergone by Professor Hemingway at the Harvard School of Public Health. He said, "We want to look at it more carefully in following studies." Hint, 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 hint to the CDC. I'm already writing my grant application, and I've bought an entire case of sweet tarts. Here's some teenagers in here, ladies and gentlemen. While the simplest keys to child rearing are being lost to the ages here in our culture, the best minds in the nation are studying soda pop and sweet tarts and Mike and Ike to figure out why it is that the behavior of our young people is out of control. It's just a sad commentary on the state of Western civilization. Folks, there are really just a few keys that if you keep in mind, your kid won't be an out-of-control maniac and a misery, a source of misery in your life. Number one, stay together. That's the first one. Mom and dad, stay together. I know, it sounds very complicated, and I'm sure it's difficult at times. You don't have to tell me, right? More than that, you don't have to tell my extremely attractive audio engineer how difficult that can be. What? Just staying together. That's the first key. It's a good show. It's not? Well, I really appreciate that, my dear. I feel the same way. But sometimes I wonder if we're on the same wavelengths. Maybe you're, but you're not. Okay, so number one, if you need to take notes, just write this down. Number one, parents, stay together. Number two, train your children. Yes, train them. And that means train them in all aspects of life, including making them aware of the fact that they were created by a living God who will judge the living and the dead someday and to whom they will be held accountable, and that they're accountable to their fellow citizens, the other little boys and girls around them. And set up scenarios, ladies and gentlemen, in which you train your children. Number three, teach your children. Teach them about history, civilization, culture, manners, etiquette, and God, of course. The real God, the creator God, the living God, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. Teach them about Jesus Christ and what he did. Now, he can teach them how to love one another by his word. Number four, discipline your children. When it's necessary, discipline them. And if that means corporal punishment, if corporal punishment is appropriate, ladies and gentlemen, don't spare the rod and hate your child. Discipline your children. And number five, spend time with your children. I know, it sounds complicated, but spend time with your children. Even if you're not doing anything important, spend time with your children. So there, I guess this is the first stage of our grant application, my dear, that we'll send in to the CDC. We want to study these five keys. And in the meantime, I guess we could keep the kids off the donuts and the soda pop, but I think studying those five keys is certainly more worthy of intellectual endeavor than Soda Pop and Mike and Ike. But then again, it doesn't really cost anything to study these five keys. In fact, our pastor down at Denver Bible Church, Pastor Bob Enyard, he's doing it for free. You could just show up, take notes. You can buy the CD for, I forget, $10. Forget the multi-million-dollar grant. We've got the CD for a few bucks, all right? All right, so let's move on. I hope you were all taking notes. file those away, and do your best with your kids. You know, the one thing is to actually be involved and care, and to be sentient and to be conscious of the fact that there are eternal consequences to how you raise your kids. There are temporal consequences, obviously, in day-to-day life, but there are also eternal consequences in how you raise your kids, and it's very important. Did I put love? Let me see here. I didn't put love in there. Is that the sixth key, or is love implied by the first five? I think that love would be implied by the first five keys, and so love is it should be understood, but maybe that's a big problem these days, is that in a culture, in a civilization where certain members of our society, children in particular, are disposable for convenience, and their lives can be snuffed out, perhaps parents are losing sight of what had always been understood, that even wicked people love their children. Maybe we're losing touch with that. All right, now speaking of parenting, let's move on to another story. Now, the article here is out of the Daily Mail from London, but apparently it's centered here in Colorado. Now, I was on the road all week this week, and I did not have a chance to watch any of our local snooze coverage here in the greater Denver metro area. But here is a story that apparently bubbled to the surface while I was out evading capture by the Highway Patrol on the highways and byways of the greater Southwest. 7-year-old Bobby Montoya, this is again according to the Daily Mail, 7-year-old Bobby Montoya said he wants to follow his sister in joining the Girl Scouts. But when a troop leader said it wouldn't work out, the rejection left little Bobby Montoya devastated. Bobby said he's been bullied for looking and dressing like a girl. His mother, Felicia Archuleta, said she allows Bobby to dress and behave, quote, how he wants to be. Yeah. So mom, Felicia Archuleta, tells her son, Bobby Montoya, I wonder why they have different names. Maybe mom and dad didn't follow our first rule. Stay together. Is it socially incorrect to even mention that anymore? To bring up the fact that someone's divorced and they've got a broken home and now their kid's all screwed up? We can't even bring that up, right? That's not for polite conversation to mention that mom has a different name than her son because you don't know all the details. It could be a very complex and difficult situation. And who are you to judge anyway, McBurney? Anyway, just pointing it out, ladies and gentlemen, she allows Bobby to dress and behave how he wants to be. She added, as long as he's happy. As long as he's happy. So he dresses like a girl, and he wants to join the Girl Scouts, and mom, the vacuous Felicia Archuleta, thinks that that's going to make little Bobby happy. And, you know, the thing about Felicia Archuleta, I'm certain, even though I don't know all the complicated details of her life, I'm certain that she has a lot of reason down deep in her heart to feel guilty about why little Bobby is not very happy. That's just a guess of mine. If I were her psychologist, I might ask her about that. But last week, ladies and gentlemen, don't give up all hope for little Bobby's happiness, because last week the Girl Scouts of Colorado said they made a mistake when they rejected the little boy's application to join the Girl Scouts. It was simply a clerical error. How could we be so silly? The Girl Scouts issued a statement saying that a worker unfamiliar with the group's policies gave Bobby's family the wrong information. In their statement, the Girl Scouts said, quote, if a child identifies as a girl and the child's family presents her as a girl, Girl Scouts of Colorado would immediately call someone in authority to get some counseling to this obviously dysfunctional family. Oh, wait a minute. I'm sorry. I made that last part up. Girl Scouts of Colorado said if a child identifies as a girl and the child's family presents her as a girl, Girl Scouts of Colorado welcomes her as a Girl Scout. Oh, unbelievable. And they all had cookies and they all acted happy. But little Bobby, ladies and gentlemen, is not happy. I can assure you of that. And this mother, along with the Girl Scouts of Colorado, are guilty of child abuse. And in any sane society, they would be arrested and charged. But you know what? In Colorado, I doubt there's even a charge for this anymore. For turning a boy into a girl. For acting like a boy's a girl. And allowing a child to live in a state of complete denial of reality. Well, we opened with Chaz Bono, so that gives you some idea as to where the overall culture is. And now we drill down into some of the details about what's happening, at least here in the formerly great state of Colorado, and we find out that the entire social structure has been turned on its head, and people who should be arrested are being praised as progressive thinkers and caring and all of that. It's just, it is what it is, ladies and gentlemen. I may not be able to live in this state much longer, frankly. I'll tell you what, it's getting to me. All right, so we need some encouraging news, right?
Yeah.
We need a little bit of encouragement, ladies and gentlemen, so don't give up all hope. We've got another story from Breitbart's website. Police have made 20 arrests in the Théâtre de Ville on the banks of the Seine near Notre Dame Cathedral in France, not in Indiana. The Notre Dame Cathedral during a performance of a production called, quote, On the Concept of the Face Regarding the Son of God, directed by some Italian degenerate. Anyway, the play is the story of an incontinent man being looked after by his son. A copy of a huge portrait of Jesus Christ, a famous portrait by Renaissance artist Antonello de Messina, hangs in the back of the stage and appears to be covered in excrement toward the end of the performance, at which point they all should have been arrested. But wait, they weren't arrested. In fact, they were applauded by the degenerate European French audience and applauded by the critics. But Christian protesters apparently entered the theater and threw stink bombs into the auditorium, shouting, Enough Christophobia. That's according to the police there at Théâtre de la Ville along the banks of the Seine near Notre Dame. He threw stink bombs into a play about an incontinent man in which they cover a portrait with feces. I imagine it already stunk in there, but... Anyway, that's what these Christians did. They threw stink bombs into the auditorium. France's Ministry of Culture, there's an oxymoron. France's Ministry of Culture blamed the demonstration on members of the Institut Civitas, which back in April protested an artist whose name is Andre Serrano. They protested his renowned Immersion Piss Christ photograph in the southern papal city of Avignon. Now, you've probably all heard of that particular piece of degenerate art, quote-unquote art. So these are some... just when you thought there were no Christians left in Europe, you got some Christians throwing stink bombs on a bunch of degenerates who are covering a painting of Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. They're covering it with excrement. And the Christians entered in there and threw stink bombs onto all these freaks. By the way, folks, just to give you a little bit more encouragement, one spectator described the protesters as, quote, very young people who are very angry, but very well dressed. we're back. Bernie, we're rounding second and looking to score. I apologize for letting that bump go on so long, but I just when the guy sings, I have a hard time. By the way, I have to point this out. While I was on the road, I happened to ingest a segment of public broadcasting because the hotel I was in, it had like three channels, sports, Spanish language, and PBS. And so I ended up watching a special on the band from the 90s, the grunge band. I hate to have a mental block, but I always hated this
Nirvana.
Band. No, not Nirvana, although they were in it. The other one who copied. I can't remember.
I don't know.
Anyway, this was supposed to be a very, very good segment here, and I can't remember the name of it. Pearl Jam. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. So there's a special on PBS about Pearl Jam. Number one, I was depressed because they're already considered like some kind of classic. And to me, they were Johnny Come Latelys who killed rock and roll, frankly.
Yeah.
I'll always despise all of those grunge fiends for killing rock and roll. And it's dead, ladies and gentlemen. They said rock would never die. I think The Who might have said that.
AC/DC.
Well, I think a lot of them said it.
Okay.
AC/DC said it too.
Yeah.
And then he died. When he died, rock and roll continued to live.
Yeah.
When Kurt Cobain died, the whole calliope crashed to the ground, as the old rock and roll song goes. But anyway, it was a particularly... Now, I always hated Pearl Jam, and I always hated grunge and everything associated with Seattle, except maybe coffee. The only thing that good that ever came out of Seattle. But there was a segment, an entire 5 to 7 minute segment, talking all about how Pearl Jam had worked with an organization promoting abortion. They even organized their tours. And Pearl Jam was associated with a tour with other grunge, deviant, freak degenerates. They went around the country promoting Planned Parenthood and abortion. And it was a major part of their early career. And now it's just, now I feel a lot better about hating them, and I hope that they never have a musical comeback, but I do hope they repent of their advocacy of the murder of innocent people, because not only have they killed rock and roll, but they're on their way to killing Western civilization with their advocacy of criminal activity right out in the public. By the way, the vote is coming November 8th, down in Mississippi. Amendment 26 is up for a vote. I don't know if I have a specific story on it this week, but I've been watching it down there. It looks like personhood has a fairly decent shot of, if not winning, at least scaring the hell out of the liberals at the polls. So if we win, they'll be jumping off buildings. But if we get 40% of the vote, they'll be running for cover and trying to figure out what to do. Anyway, you should all pray for Amendment 26, pray for the personhood movement. If you can vote in Mississippi, please vote. If you can't, go to Personhood USA. We'll put a link on the website. You can join Personhood Mississippi's phone bank, and you can actually start dialing for votes in the state of Mississippi, encouraging members of the most pro-life state in the union to get out and vote yes on 22 and send Pearl Jam straight to hell. Or straight on the road to repentance, I should say. I get a little upset sometimes. They had a picture of him writing with a big black marker on his arm, pro-choice, while he was singing one of their big hits. I had to step outside the room and vomit in the parking lot. Anyway, I ended up switching back to the Spanish language station. I didn't know what they were talking about, but at least it didn't make me sick. All right. Now... where was I? I got distracted by that whole thing. And by the way, that last bump was not Pearl Jam. I just want to point that out.
Yeah, that's
we certainly wouldn't allow any of that to go on. Chris Cornell was in that thing, and he's a really evil, really evil guy. I've got to tell you. As a vocalist, I've got a lot of respect for his skill, abilities, and talent, but he's a very, very evil, evil person who needs to repent, or his fine vocal stylings will be burning in hell forever. Not to put too fine a point on it, Chris, but we would like to have you in heaven. You could sing backup vocals for me.
Backup? Oh, my goodness.
Well, now my voice will be returned to its, its original grandeur once I get to heaven. You know.
I want Prince to be the front.
We would like Prince to be in heaven, too. Now, that's a long shot as well. But anyway, we get upset, ladies and gentlemen. We make fun of people on this show. And we try to stigmatize certain behaviors and make other people feel bad or even guilty about the open sin in which they're involved and advocating that sin. But we do hope for their repentance and their eventual turning to the living God before he judges them. It's a fearful thing to fall into the hands of the living God. All you grungers out there. All right. Now, we were just in Europe. We were talking about the Christians who threw stink bombs on the already smelly degenerates there along the banks of the Seine at the play where they were making fun of Jesus Christ, who died for their sins, by the way, who endured the most torturous execution in the history of mankind for these very degenerates upon whom these Christians threw these stink bombs. I think the stink bombs are an apt reminder to these heathens of the fact that they have trod the Son of God underfoot and have mocked him when all he wanted to do for them was to save their very souls from eternal damnation. And so that was a bit of encouragement from the Christian community in Europe. Let's continue in Europe. Angela Merkel, this is a story from the EU Observer. Angela Merkel has warned, in light of the negotiations and the new bailout deal for Europe, that it's a quarterly thing. And I think starting around December, it'll be a monthly and then a weekly bailout of Greece and other EU member states. Well, during this last negotiation, Angela Merkel warned her fellow Europeans right there in Brussels. She said, quote, peace should not be taken for granted if the euro fails. She said this last Wednesday, ahead of the summit where they made the latest deal to allegedly bail out the EU. She said, quote, nobody should take for granted another 50 years of peace and prosperity in Europe. They are not for granted. She said, if the euro fails, Europe fails, unquote. Now, I disagree with Angela that if the euro fails, Europe fails. Europe fails if the European people fail and they decide to turn on one another and devour one another, as they've been known to do in the past. On more than one occasion, as a matter of fact, just in the last century. But Angela is disingenuous in her assertion that the euro is what sustains Europe. That's not what sustains Europe. It's Europeans that sustain Europe. And if they decide to forgive one another's debt and not turn on one another and kill each other and devour each other, Europe will not go away. I know that many of us have wondered, why doesn't Europe just go away? But folks, the last thing we need is another bloodbath in Europe. And I know when you watch, when you look on TV at the European people walking through the street, you could never imagine them turning on one another, taking up arms, and slaughtering each other in the millions. But I'm sure you could have never thought that in 1912 either. But indeed, it did happen. What else does Merkel have to say here? She says, quote, we have a historical obligation to protect by all means Europe's unification process begun by our forefathers after centuries of hatred and blood spilt. No, none of us can foresee what the consequences would be if we were to fail. It could mean war, unquote. So, and she is right about that. She is right in that the European people, having now discharged themselves from the moorings of Christianity and morality, if the euro fails, what are the Europeans to fall back on? It could be that they fall back on the centuries-old hatreds that have driven war in Europe over the millennia. You know, folks, the whole world is buying time against the day of reckoning. Europe just did it this week. We will do it here in the United States again in December. We will buy some more time against the day of reckoning. But ladies and gentlemen, the day of reckoning is coming. Accounting and mathematics is brutal. And there's no wiggle room in math and in accounting. So the day of reckoning must come. What we need to do and what Europeans should do, if it's at all possible, is to look to God and to look at one another as sons of God and brothers and sisters, whose debts we can forgive. Ladies and gentlemen, it's only money, right? Money, I think we can negotiate on. You know, there are certain moral imperatives that cannot be negotiated. You shall not kill. You shall not lie. You shall not kidnap. You shall not commit adultery. There are certain moral absolutes upon which we should not negotiate. But money we can negotiate, ladies and gentlemen. If it means bloodshed and hatred, I think we should all think about forgiving one another's debts rather than sending the world into another conflagration, costing millions of lives. That's why, you know, people ask me about Herman Cain and his 999 plan. And I say, look, if Herman would just get on board and realize what his position on abortion is, he got a little confused this past week, wasn't sure exactly where he stood, but I can understand that. Herman's only 60 years old. Maybe he's just not sure if killing little babies is good or bad. He had to reframe the question, restate his argument. He's for it, but if the family chooses, well, then, no, they'd be breaking the law, but should the government be, I don't know. Herman, get on board, admit, acknowledge, and promote the idea that every human being, especially in these United States, has the right to life granted to them from the living God, and that no one has the right to take that life. No one has the right to take innocent life. And then, Herman, your 999 plan, I'm willing to negotiate. Put it in, you know, let's try it. I'm willing to try just about anything at this point when it comes to economics. But Herman, you're going to have to get the former right before I even listen to you on the latter. Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Weekly Worldview, and I'm Doug McBurney. We're round and third and headed for home, and I hope you're enjoying the broadcast. We sure enjoy doing it, and we appreciate you being here with us week in and week out, but now we've got a scant few minutes and an awful lot to cover, so we'll go quickly as we always do here toward the end. I've got a story from the Associated Press about the rich. That's right, the rich. I just drove by a sign that said, tax the rich. I'll get to that in a second. According to this story by the AP, the richest 1% of Americans have been getting richer over the last three decades, while the middle class and the poor have seen their after-tax household income only crawl up in comparison. That's according to a new government study. After-tax income for the top 1% almost tripled from 1979 to 2007. This is according to the Congressional Budget Office, if you can believe a single word any of those bozos say. For the people in the middle class, says the CBO, for the people in the middle of the economic scale, after-tax income grew by just 40%, and those at the bottom experienced an 18% increase, just an 18% increase. Oh, hold on, folks, I'm wiping a tear away. CBO Director Doug Elmendorf said in a blog post, quote, the distribution of after-tax income in the United States was substantially more unequal in 2007. Than it was back in 1979. I want to point out to everyone that 1979 was long before grunge. I'm just bringing it up. Okay, but folks, here's the bottom line. There's a reason that the top 1% or the top 20% have experienced such a growth and economic advancement over the last 30 or 40 years. And for those of you who are in the bottom 30%, cover your ears because this is going to be very difficult for you to hear. Folks, the reason that the top earners are making more money is because the top 1% or 20%, they work harder than you do, they're smarter than you are, they're better looking than you are, they're luckier than you are, and they're not like you in the Occupy movement with enough time on your hands to occupy a tent that your mom bought you, but without the gumption to go out and get a job. You hippie scum losers, all of you who whine about not making enough money, you are not the 99%. You're the 1%. You know, I know an awful lot of people who don't make a lot of money, but they don't sit around and whine about it. They're happy for what they have. They thank God for the blessings that this country has given them. They pray before every meal, acknowledging that if were it not for the goodness of God, that they wouldn't even have that. And they don't sit around and express jealousy over the so-called 1%. If you're, and now I want to get to this Occupy thing, okay? Because it's really got me upset. You know, we drove by on our way home from church today, the McBurney clan. We drove by the Occupy Denver people down at Civic Center Park. It looked like a Grateful Dead bus had overturned and vomited out the road crew and the deadheads there in Civic Center Park. I mean, my extremely attractive audio engineer, she said, you know, if they would just turn off the Wi-Fi and cell phone services, all these loser, hippie, smelly scum would go home. Yeah. And I agree with that, but further, I'd say if you would just turn off the cameras, they'd all go home, for crying out loud. What I don't understand, ladies and gentlemen, is why is the so-called conservative media as obsessed with the Occupy Whatever movement as MSNBC is and NPR? Why do you get just as much coverage on Fox News and talk radio as you get on the liberal channels? I mean, who exactly are the useful idiots? Is it the ignorant 22-year-old stoned-out hippie waking up in his own filth in Civic Center Park here in Denver? Or is it Sean Hannity? Or is it Glenn Beck? Well, with Beck, you might have to make an exception because he predicted all this. This is practically his career now, is covering the Occupy Wall Street movement. I mean, he's got a vested interest. You know, Glenn can't turn it off because he's a part of the story now. But who exactly are the useful idiots, you conservatives? For crying out loud, this is a completely orchestrated, completely fabricated. This is not a movement. This is an operation. This is a racket being run by socialists and communists and people who shouldn't be given the time of day and certainly shouldn't be covered on the air as if it's actual news. All right, who exactly are the useful idiots? We drove by these people today with their signs, tax the rich, and none of them looked like they had taken a shower. I will hand it to them, though. The snowstorm didn't make them go home. They're still out there.
Oh, it wasn't that bad
of a snowstorm. I wasn't here in town, but I predicted that the first snowstorm would send the hippies back to their mom's basement, but maybe mom said, "You're not sleeping here, you bum.
The thing is, it melted the next day.
So oh, it melted off the next day. Okay, so they went home, did their laundry in mom's laundry room, and came. Anyway, so there was a few dozen of them out there waving their signs as we drove by on Broadway there. And it was just interesting to contrast the hippies laying in the park insisting that we tax the rich and forgive their student loans. Meanwhile, my 10-year-old daughter is asking me, she wants to go house to house through the neighborhood and ask to rake people's leaves for money. It's an amazing contrast, ladies and gentlemen. And it gets back to child rearing. That's why my children will rule over your children. Because I stuck with the simple 5 keys there. While you sent your kids off to the public school factories and had them brainwashed and to become little degenerate hippies. All right, now I've just about run myself out of time here. We'll just have to do some of these really quickly. Headline from the Financial Times, China could play a key role in the EU rescue, the rescue of the EU. Yeah, they're likely to buy an awful lot of euro bonds. Apparently, the Chinese are being courted. Keep in mind, folks, the Chinese are not that smart. Remember, I know we're all afraid of the what is it, the tiger, the Chinese tiger, or they call it the lion? I can't remember. The Chinese economy is supposed to be rising. America's on the decline, and we're all supposed to shake in our boots at the Chinese. Folks, the Chinese are not that smart. They've been buying our bonds for 50 years. How smart can they be? Now they're going to buy the European bonds. And listen to this. Chinese bankers say that Beijing must be given a strong guarantee of the safety of investment.
Before we buy you your bonds, Mr. Euro, we need a very secure guarantee of the safety of our investment.
And the Europeans are saying, yeah, sure, guarantee. We'll write you guarantees all day. Yeah, yeah. And the Chinese are going to buy their bonds, and they're going to get stiffed. And then where are they going to be? Anyway, they're not that smart, folks. Remember, in the 1970s, the Chinese bought into the one-child policy, which is probably the most catastrophic social policy ever instituted in any nation. So the Chinese are crafty, but they're not that smart. Don't be afraid of them. We can defeat them economically. We can compete with them, and we can win. And, of course, morally and spiritually, we could help the Chinese a lot. At least we Christians. You heathens and pagans and other degenerates, anyone in the Occupy movement, you're not including that statement. You should move to China, for crying out loud. All right. Story from the New York Daily News that you probably didn't hear about. A suspected Serbian terrorist. I love how they introduce this. A Serbian terrorist fired an assault rifle at the U.S. Embassy in Sarajevo in Bosnia-Herzegovina. So that's a misleading. I hate the way they write these stories. Yeah, maybe he was a Serbian, but he was a Muslim. His name was Mevlid Jasarevic. He's a member of the conservative Wahhabi sect of Islam. That's the same order that rules Saudi Arabia, by the way. And you'll remember, ladies and gentlemen, that back during the war, the Bosnians' war, 1992 to 95, Muslims from around the world flocked to the Balkan country to join the fight. And, of course, we funded them, and Bill Clinton bombed the Christians and blew up the bridges and basically ensured that the Muslim radicals had a base of operation right in the heart of Central Europe. Thank you very much, Bill Clinton, for entering America in on the wrong side in the first battle in the war against radical Islam. Thanks. Thanks, Bubba Bill Jeff. Another one from the War File. This is from the Daily Mail in London. Do we get any news from the United States anymore? It seems like only the British have reporters. I don't know. Sergeant First Class Christopher B. DeMage was one of three soldiers killed by a roadside bomb two Saturdays ago near Kandahar province in Afghanistan. The elite ranger was serving his 14th combat deployment in Afghanistan. He's a husband and father of San Diego from San Diego. He was one of the team who rescued Private Jessica Lynch from her Iraqi captors in 2003, at which point he probably hoped the war was just about over. He got blown up by an IED on his 14th deployment, ladies and gentlemen. How long are we going to stand and tolerate feckless leaders who don't know how to conduct nor win a war? 14 deployments, ridiculous. A decade at war. Outrageous that we should stand for this as Americans. From the Washington Times. All right, I'm going to go a little long. I'll warn you. I'm going to go just a little bit long. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu decided to swap over 1,000 terrorists for one Israeli soldier who was held hostage. I'm sure you've all heard the story. Galid Shalit was released, and 1,027 Palestinian convicts. These were men convicted of, in most cases, capital crimes, or what should have been capital crimes. And the Israelis I can't comprehend how they did this, why they did this, but they did it. A commentator or an observer of Israeli defense policy noted that perhaps this was the way for Netanyahu to clear the deck before an attack on Iran. Apparently, Mr. Netanyahu has faced opposition to attacking Iran from his army chief of staff and his intelligence chief, but both retired earlier this year and have been replaced by men in the Netanyahu cabinet who are believed to hold the view that an attack on Iran may be in the cards. I still don't understand it. I don't know. It doesn't make any sense to me. I thought maybe if I read this story, it would somehow make sense. That this was Israel's way of preparing to bomb Iran by trading one soldier for 1,000 terrorists. And, still doesn't make a lick of sense to me. I don't get it. I don't know what Bibi's thinking about. I don't know what's up with Israel anymore. Like, they've gone soft. If Israel goes soft and goes under, folks, I mean, it really could be 1,000 years of darkness. It really could. All right, do I want to do this story? No. Okay. I've got a couple stories here, but they're not funny or uplifting in any way. But that's what I'm going to have to close on because, I'll do all three of them then. So I don't want to bum you out, but the truth is what it is. This is from CNN. Disgusting and vile outlet. Vomiting liberal propaganda on the citizenry every day. They have a story about the population bomb. You remember the population bomb back in the 60s and 70s? Yeah, they don't talk about it so much today, but it was quite the buzzword back then. Well, CNN says today, women are having half as many children as their mothers and grandmothers. The global average is down to 2.5 children per woman. Yeah, CNN points out this is not just a phenomenon in the rich world. Much of Asia now has fertility rates below 2, from Japan to Korea to China. Of course, China with its one-child policy. Through Taiwan, Vietnam, Burma, Singapore, and much of southern India, parts of the Middle East. Behind the veil, even the women of Iran have cut their fertility from 8 to less than 2 in a single generation. The young people out on the streets demanding democracy during the alleged Arab Spring are arguably far more politically active because they are not at home raising large families. Does that go for the hippies stinking up Civic Center Park here in Denver? They should. They should have jobs and kids. They wouldn't have time to lay around and moan and whine and complain about their lot in life if they were doing the right thing and working hard every day and raising a family. But they've decided, they've been trained and taught not to have kids, and they are acting out the desires of the educators and parents who neglected them in their formative years. By the way, that was my commentary, not CNN. Hopefully you can tell when I shift gears from CNN. Anyway, back to CNN. While even young children can be an economic asset on an African peasant farm, they are an economic liability in cities where they require an education before they can get a job. Did you hear what CNN said? Children are an economic liability. It's one of the biggest lies in the history of mankind. But not surprising from CNN. Let's see here. If Africa follows Asia, we are likely to see peak population by about mid-century, perhaps at about 9 billion people. We just hit 7 billion. High five, 7 billion. All right. I'm happy we hit 7 billion. But anyway, we might peak out around 9 billion. Aging, according to the CNN article, aging is set to be the dominant demographic phenomenon of the 21st century, just as the population boom dominated the 20th century. What does this... Here's the question CNN asks. What does this mean for the environment? Only CNN... Only CNN would see that as the obvious question. Well, what does this mean for the environment? Oh, my goodness. They say, CNN says, rising consumption today is far bigger threat to the environment than rising population. Yeah, the world's consumption patterns are what we need to fix. It's not the reproductive habits anymore that we need to worry about. According to CNN, the population bomb may be being diffused by the women of the poor world, but the rich world has not even begun to diffuse the consumption bomb. That's right, folks. Now, this puts the lie to the leftist population myth. But now they just shift gears. Now it's, okay, population, you were right, yeah, okay, but it's consumption. Now, remember, it was global cooling back in the 70s. Global cooling, another ice age. But when that turned out to be fraudulent, false, and obviously easily discredited, they just shifted gears to global warming. And now, that's not working out, and it's global climate change. Anyway, the left will just keep shifting to different lies in order to force their main agenda, which is self-aggrandizement, selfishness, and eventually suicide. Yeah, this put the lie to their strategies. And I just heard, I listened to a fellow on the radio, an economist, who said that we are coming upon a 70-year cycle of population. The baby boom is just about over. All the baby boomers have passed their peak spending years. They're moving into retirement. What does that mean? And there are fewer of us coming up now. So his prediction is that not only will the economy not recover, but it could be a generation before it even returns to where it was 20 years ago. Just based on flat-out population, the number of people out there buying cars, houses, washing machines, furniture. Older people just don't do that stuff. It's the young people. It's the young guy with the three kids and the wife who buys the house, the car, the furniture, the washer, the dryer. And there just aren't enough of us anymore. So the economy's not going to recover to where it was because there just aren't enough people to participate in the recovery. And this demographic economic phenomenon will be another fact that puts the lie to the liberals. All right. Quick one from the personhood file, ladies and gentlemen. As I said, pray for Amendment 26 down in Mississippi. The vote will be held on November 8th. And all this talk of economics could be swept aside in a massive heart attack on the left as they're forced to discuss the issue of the murder of innocent people that they legalized. Yeah, the argument could shift dramatically. And all of the presidential candidates and the horse race and all the garbage that they've been spouting and spewing and talking about, it's not going to matter a whit because the left is going to be freaked out that we're going to stop them from killing babies, which is at the top of their agenda. But let's go to this Reuters story. Guilty pleas to third-degree murder have been entered by Adrian Mottin and Sharon West, who both worked for Dr. Kermit Gosnell, at what prosecutors have described as a decrepit and unsanitary abortion clinic known as Women's Medical Society in West Philadelphia. Sentencing was set for December 2nd. The maximum penalty for these people who murdered innocent people is 40 years. Yeah, just 40 years. Seven more defendants face charges in the case, including the abortionist, who a grand jury said, they said that this abortionist, quote, regularly and illegally delivered live viable babies in the third trimester of pregnancy and then murdered these newborns by severing their spinal cords with scissors. A clinic worker, a co-worker, testified that a woman gave birth to a large baby at the clinic, delivering the child into the toilet. The co-worker told them that the baby was moved and looked like it was moving and that it looked like it was swimming. The doctor, the abortionist, reached into the toilet, got the baby out, and cut its neck, and the baby died. Sherry West was accused in the murder of murder and the death of a 41-year-old patient who died of cardiac arrest because she was overdosed with Demerol. You know, this is what happens when you codify murder as medical care. It's kind of hard to draw the line when the main operation of your medical clinic is to kill people. It's pretty easy to get sloppy, and that's apparently what happened right here. They just got a little sloppy in the judicious execution of their primary function in life, killing babies, if you can imagine that. All right. Now, this isn't the best way to end the show, but I got to do it because it needs to be reported. From San Marcos, Texas, police say a 22-year-old pregnant woman who was struck and hit by a hit-and-run driver while walking home from work gave birth to a little girl. A San Marcos police say Diane Ford was returning home from her job late last Tuesday when she was hit. She was 37 weeks pregnant. She was taken to the hospital that night. She gave birth by cesarean section the following morning, and the girl was taken to the hospital's pediatric intensive care unit. The mother died the following day. Her boss said that Ford was excited about her future as a mother. The boss said that she knew she was having a girl. She had even picked out a name. Police were trying to find the driver of the car at last report. Folks, this is an Associated Press article talking about a mother and a tragic story. But the story never even mentions the father or even implies that there is a father or any concern about the father or what the father thought or where the father was or whether there even was a father that was known. And I just don't understand that. The thing I was looking for in this story was, what about the father? But apparently the Associated Press and other outlets of liberal media, they just don't care about fathers anymore. They've not even worth mentioning in the article. And well, hopefully that'll change, ladies and gentlemen, as we fathers become look deep down within ourselves and try to do things to become more worthy of commentary. At least worthy of mention. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's the Weekly Worldview for this week. I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com, Denver Bible Church, Personhood USA, American Right to Life, and of course, as always, my other brother Daryl, who makes it all happen here at the Weekly Worldview Studios. Should the Lord tarry, we will be back with you next week, and until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.